Welcome to the CEN Show, a platform where we learn from the world community. I'm your host, Roski Mascani, and this evening on the panel, we have Professor Amin Ra. We have Brother Ahi. And we have Miss Naomi Marshall Horn. And our guest for this evening is Brother Thomas Muhammad. And we have Ernest McBride coming in as I speak. And Brother Thomas, as I call him, is one of our team members. And he provides us with excellent information that really has us, you know, thinking about the commentary that he brings. And it's I really love his information, and I think it's things that we really should think about and use it if necessary to further ourselves as educated people. And Brother Thomas, he's an author with us on a book. He's been on numerous times, and I just, you know, he's one of my comrades. So, Brother Thomas, I'm glad you're here again, and always look forward to you coming on. So, we're just going to get started. We have his topic already out, and he's ready to go. Brother Thomas, welcome again, and always good to see you, brother. So you can go ahead and start.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. I'd like to ask permission from our most gracious seasoned elder for permission to speak, Baba Ra.
Yes, go ahead.
Thank you, sir. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, everyone said there's no God but Allah who appeared in the person of Master Fra Muhammad. Everyone is the most honorable Elijah Muhammad is the messenger of Allah, and Amir Mustafar Khan is our divine reminder. And I greet my beloved brothers and sisters in the greeting words of peace of Assalamu Alaikum.
Alaikum Assalam.
Alaikum Assalam.
Yes, sir. The purpose of this presentation is to open the eyes of our community to a reality that I feel is very important. I feel that there is a hidden secret of power that we as Black people are not tapping into. Every group of people, when they think of the greatest being, the greatest power, the greatest in character, the greatest in humility and truth, they think of a person or an image that reflects them as a people. It has the same phenotype, genotype, appearance in every aspect, DNA. It's like they're a direct reflection of that divine supreme being. And Black people in America in particular are like the only people in mass that do not draw from the same type of strength, same type of truth. We do not see the creator of all life and all things in our own image. Therefore, we do not look into ourselves as being a reflection of the most powerful, the most humble, the most truthful, the most honorable. We don't see those traits in ourselves en masse, and we begin to act other than that because we do not reflect the greatest of ourselves at the optimal state of our existence, the most as the original people of the earth, as the standard bearer for what humanity really means, what the humanity or humaneness in humanity really means. We are the pinnacle of all things good in humanity. We are the original, and that was kissed by the creator when we were first brought into existence and placed on this planet. And we do not carry ourselves, and we do not visualize God being actually, when we look at ourselves, looking at God, we don't visualize that a creator is omnipotent, omniscient, and omnipresent, powerful, as us actually being a reflection and a direct descendant. And I think that's a major flaw in why we have on many different levels became inert in our growth and our development and our evolution as a divine, supreme reflection of God. So I'd like to bring forth some information that maybe can change that unfortunate paradigm into something new that we can all use as a foundation to evolve, starting now, this reality, and carry it on so that we can begin to teach our people the proper way to look at themselves as being a direct reflection and a direct descendant of that creator, divine supreme being. And my presentation is called All Ancient and Major or Modern Religions Are Rooted in the Worship of a Black God. The first thing I'd like to introduce are two stories, very similar, a little bit different, but these stories are the self-creation of the Black God. The first one is the self-creation of a Black God. The second one is the self is a story that was is called the self-creation of the Blue Black God. And they're very similar, but we got to realize that what we were told about the creation process and the creation of man, that has nothing to do with us. That is something that was made up or taken from different stories and was cut up and pieced together to justify the existence said the beginning began, Muhammad teaches, with limitless darkness. The primordial darkness was not simply the absence of light. It was a material darkness, an aqueous or watery darkness, a triple darkness. Within the triple darkness, there was God as a divine force. We know that there is that water existed in the universe because when we see things like a meteor or any type of a comet, it has trails of ice on it's travels through the universe, and there's trails of ice on its surface and on and as it transcends in the triple darkness. The ice or water comes from a combination of intense cold and the heat that atomic particles create when they bounce against one another as they spin throughout the universe. The heat combined with the intense darkness creates a precipitation. That precipitation is watery, but the intense cold makes it icy. But the heat makes it watery. It's a combination of the precipitation that freezes, and that being the primordial aqueous or material that was also used to create life as we know it. And this information is found in Theology of Time by the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad. The next stage, this force was powerful, but had remained latent. It was there, but it wasn't doing anything. It was motionless for untold trillions of years. But at some point, this divine force entered the atom and caused it to move. This first motion, spiraling type of motion resembling the number six, was the beginning of time, because time is motion divided by distance. It's motion and distance. They're relative, all right? Next, this primordial atom became the root of God's physical body, which God took 6 trillion years to build up, atom by atom, cell by cell, when these original 10,000 atoms came together by some affinite energy. God became one, Allah God, evolved from that first DNA molecule into a living human being. And that dark complexion of that original man, that original God, reflected the universe, the triple darkness of the universe out of which he created himself. So that's where that dark complexion came from. It came from the triple darkness of the universe where all life existed in its latent and dormant state until that divine power brought it into existence. The next story is the self-creation of the blue black God. Now, when we look at history now, you see a lot of pictures of deities in different cultures, but they have a bluish tint, a bluish black tint. Well, here's another story that also talks about how that black god created himself out of the triple darkness of the universe, but where did it also talks about where that blue black tint came from. The self-creation of the blue-black god emits light. It says, when the creator god first emerged, the ancient sources tell us he lacked the black body. Indeed, he was light that separated and emerged out of the darkness. His body, we are told, was originally a body of light described variously as white gold, yellow gold, or red gold. The brilliance of this body surpassed that of the sun, which the creator or deity, sun god, created only as a sign and a vicar. This brilliantly luminous body proved lethal to his future creation. His creatures were perishing at the sight of it, and his cosmos was being scorched. The creator or deity decided to cloak his luminosity in a body or veil. He decided to cloak that light in a veil, which he made from the primordial waters that we talked about earlier, out of which he emerged. The primordial matter or black acquiesce became the substance of this new body that was wrapped around this light, which he wore over the luminous form like a garment concealing its brilliance. But some of this brilliance shone through the hair pores of this new body. So the black was wrapped around this light, and it has pores like our skin has pores. So what happened was the hair pores of the new body, black body, produced a dark blue iridescence. As the light burst through the pores combined with the darkness of the body, it produced in a luminous glow or a dark blue. The result was spheric body of the creator deity. While the luminous fiery body was terrible and destructive, the blue-black spheric body was beautiful and auspicious, a mercy to the creatures. So combining the darkness of the universe as that darkness wrapped around that light, the body had pores where hair, you know, the hairs of the skin burst through the pores. The hairs burst through the pores of the skin. Well, as the light illuminated through the body, through the pores, that's where you have that blue iridescence, that blue light coming through, combining the darkness with that light bursting through the pores. And that's why you have blue as the sky, dark as the rain cloud. A god named Vishnu, which is a god that was identified by the East Indian, by the Hindus, was the personification of beauty. The act of cloaking the divinely luminous form in a black body was considered a divine sacrifice, a sacrifice that resulted in the first human being, Allah the original. So just like I was saying before, the blue... The dark Vishnu, I mean the blue, came from the body, the black body being wrapped, the darkness wrapping the light and allowing the blue to go through the pores as a sacrifice that resulted in the first human being, Allah, the original man, and which permitted the creation of the more densely material. And here's an example of all of the different deities that were identified having a blue iridescence. We had from Osiris to Amun to Hapi to Rama to Makahala. We had Daikoko of the Japanese, the Makahala of the Japanese. We have Krishna of the Hindus, Vishnu of the Hindus, Siddhartha of the Buddhas. We have the Zambala, Tibetan Buddhism, the monk. We have the Kali. And we have Shiva. All these are ancient deities with this blue iridescence. So I'm going to go over how ancient civilizations identify a black god. We're going to talk about the first black gods of Africa. Just a few. There's thousands. I didn't want to go into the thousands and thousands, but I just wanted to cover some of the main ones. We have the major black gods of Kemet. We have like Ra, the sun god. Obviously, the sun god being in Egypt or Kemet, land of the blacks or land of the burnt skin people, and being the fact that it's a sun god, that is almost synonymous with black. I don't want to go over the stories. I'm just going to go, Ra was Egypt's most important sun god, also known as Khepri, when rising the tomb, when setting in the tent. Aten as the solar disk, as the main creator deity. Ra also produced twin gods, Shu and Tefnut. So it, and they have their own mythical stories as it relates to the gods as well. We have Osiris, which is Isis's husband. Osiris was killed by his brother Set, only to be resurrected by Isis to become lord of the underworld and the god of the new life, fertility. This is all just preaching preaching to the choir right now in terms of some of these identified deities. We have Isis, daughter Regeb and Nut. Isis was the perfect mother who eventually became Kemet's most important deity, more clever than a million gods and more powerful than 1,000 soldiers. She is the prototype of the Virgin Mary, the Black Madonna and Child. She's the prototype. She is the beginner of it. All right. Next, we have Horus, the son of both Osiris and Isis. When his father Osiris became Lord of the Underworld, Horus succeeded him as a king on Earth and became the god with whom every human pharaoh was then identified. The story of his uncle Set killing his father Osiris, Isis separating all the pieces in the Nile, Isis reconfiguring the pieces, and then giving birth to, out of the spiritual birth, giving birth to Horus, who later then avenged his Osiris by killing Set. We do have Set, which I just told you the story. He was envious of his brother Osiris, killed him. Took the began to rule until Horus gained vengeance or whatnot. And like I said, the Isis and Horus were the prototype to the Black Madonna and Child. Well, Osiris, Isis, and Horus is the prototype for the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost. The Father being Osiris, the Son being Horus, the Holy Ghost being Isis. Also, there's Yoruba of Africa, Orisha. These are very, very powerful gods, over 5,000 years old. There's over 200 spiritual forces, all having to do with the elements, nature, spirituality, and also different abilities that human beings at their optimal state will be able to express and be able to manifest as well. And a lot of these Orishas are prototypes to not only some of the pantheon Greco-Roman gods, but superheroes. They are all of the comic book characters are these are the prototypes to those to the comic book characters, like Superman and things of that nature. So all of these gods had their own unique abilities, and they were stolen and they were culture vultured by the Western world and kidnapped. And my goal is to take them back and begin to see ourselves in our optimal state as reflecting the power, the integrity, the respect, the strength and the honor and the best of ourselves in us identifying the God that we really are, the God within, the reflection of the Most High God, Creator. We have Asia. We have black gods of Asia, many black gods. I'm just going to go over a few. We have Buddha Siddhartha. According to tradition, the historical Buddha lived 563 to 483 BC. He was a dark god or dark. He was more like considered the enlightened one. I wouldn't say he was a god, but he was like a reflection of the Most High God, the closest you could get. He was fully enlightened. His pictures often shown with African phenotypes and kinky hair. And you can tell that's hair because as it gets more westernized, they take the corn rolls out and make it wavy, which means the original Buddha had kinky hair and African phenotypes, lips, nose, and cheekbones, and so forth. We have Kali, which is a black goddess, black Hindu goddess. The name Kali first appears in the Atharva Veda, a collection of hymns and mantras published between 1200 BCE and 1000 BCE, which is way before Caucasians even knew anything about worshiping and deities and math and science or anything like that when they were in caves. However, she is not a goddess, but rather a fierce black tongue, one of the seven belonging to Agni, the god of fire. All right. So this is just another one of those who she would fight for the justice of the her people at that time, and she was venerated as a god. We also have a very popular god in Hinduism, Krishna, the black god of India. Krishna is called the black god because the Sanskrit name Krishna itself means dark or black, which is also a spiritual symbol for infinity, mystery, and the divine. The name Krishna means black. You don't hear this. I was doing some research and I saw a video where the East Indian person was like, Krishna means black. It's a black, it tells you it's a black god, but they lighten Krishna up. Instead of making him dark blue, they make him light blue. They do all this to Europeanize and westernize Krishna because Krishna is one of the most popular gods of Hinduism. We have Makahala, the great black one. The name Makahala comes from Sanskrit. Maha means great and Kala means black or time. So Makahala translates the great black one or lord of time. This is no joke. I feel honestly in the essence of my being that when we as black people start looking at God, looking at us being a direct reflection and God in our own image, we begin that will trigger us to get on the path of evolving into our true original state as being the most pious, the most powerful, the most chaste, the most well-mannered, the well-structured, the most well-producing, our actions and our deeds will reflect that lineage of us being the divinely chosen and original people in which God directly came from God's DNA. We began to function on that high level. And that would be just the beginning of us showing and proving who we are and not allowing ourselves to be victimized and relying on other people to give to us what we can give to ourselves just by producing it ourselves, saying being it is and making it come into fruition. China, we have Paktai, mysterious black god of the north. Paktai appears to have been born in the midst of time. His ancient name is Xuan Wu, meaning dark warrior. There's no clear origin story of him, but he is a black god, one of the oldest black gods identified in China. And there's many, many more. I just found this one and I was just totally flabbergasted that this is still venerated today, and China still draws strength from their identification of worshiping and identifying black gods, just like we need to draw strength from that reality as well as a people. We have black gods of indigenous America, black god of the Navajo. According to the Navajo mythology, the black god, I don't know how to pronounce that name, sometimes referred to as darkness to be one, is the god of fire and creator of the stars in Navajo mythology. Yes, the indigenous are so-called Native Americans who's been so miscegenated by Caucasian people, they don't even have their natural dark hue anymore. They worship and identify black gods. Also, another black god by the Native Americans is Ecchua, was the sixth most commonly depicted deity of the Mayan codices. Portrayed at least 40 times, he is painted black with thick lips His name means black star. Ek means star, and Twa means black in Yucatan. There's a lot. I'm telling you, the strength of our ancestors was rooted in worshiping a black god before we were colonized and convinced to worship other than the black god. This knowledge of worshiping other than a black god is what keeps us enslaved mentally, spiritually, physically, psychologically, and keeps us at a moral decay. The black god, Tezcatlipoca, Tezcatlipoca was one of the most important gods in ancient Mesoamerica. He began as an important deity of the Toltecs, and later became the supreme god of the Aztecs. Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am. Black god of the Aztecs. We have another god called the Black God M. God M is represented throughout the ancient codices as a black god, especially an old man with a toothless jaw or one tooth. He appears to be a trader, often shown carrying goods on his head. In The Second of Africa and the Discovery of the Americas, Leo Weiner says West African like Malinkes and Bambaras made voyages to Americas long before Columbus. He identified many of the Mayans and Aztec gods as being derived from the reverence paid to the black visitors. So this, obviously, Black God M. I'm telling you, family, it goes on and on. We have Kokopelli, the great hunter. Kokopelli is a well-known fertility god and hunter among the Hopi and Zuni people of the American Southwest. As the spirit of fertility, he is seen as responsible for introducing corn agriculture to the various people across Americas. Kokopelli was first found in the rocks, but he is believed to descend in Mayan. He is also a black god. He's described as a big black man. The great hunter who was described as big black man. I'm telling you, fam. Let's take it to a little bit more modern. We have black gods of modern Christianity. As you know from the Bible, the description of Jesus in the Bible, it says his head is and his hairs were white like wool, as white as snow, and his eyes were as flame of fire, and his feet like unto fine brass, as if they were burned in a furnace. Brass burned in a furnace turns black, just like it turns pitch black, and his voice is sound of many waters. So there's a lot of images that's going around now where you have hair white like wool, as if an aged black man with white hair, woolly hair, the eyes of fire, and the skin like brass burnished in an oven. I'm telling you, it's obvious, but we don't read this. We don't pay attention to this. And then when we do, Caucasians try to tell us like, hey, color doesn't matter. Well, if it didn't matter, why portray him totally opposite to the description as described in the Bible? Then we have the Black Madonnas of Europe, miracle workers and holy icons. We have La Morenada, Black Madonna and Child statue in Spain. And a lot of these Madonnas and Child, they're worshipped and they're said to produce miracles as well. We have another one in France. Same thing, venerated by all, visited by all, and it's also said to produce miracles. This and they say that even Paris is noted. The name Paris is derived from Park of Isis. Park of Isis. And you know, Isis is the original prototype to Madonna and Child. We have in Poland, we have Our Lady of Jasna Góra, which is another very popular, well-visited Black Madonna and Child, said to have also elicited miracles. And has been identified all throughout Europe and even in Jerusalem. Now, this next part of my presentation talks about What if a black godlike figure came about in the 20th century or the 21st century? How would modern day Western world respond to a black like God figure? So I did a little bit of research and I found out that there's a legend. There's a legend of a black man that was born in 1918 and who was killed or assassinated or disappeared in 1984. His name is Simeon Toko. Simeon Toko is regarded by many as an African avatar and is often referred to as Black Jesus. Toko's story is intertwined with claims of divine powers, with some believing he was a prophet or even a divine figure. His life is shrouded in secrecy, but accounts suggest he possessed extraordinary abilities, including regenerating his body and defying death multiple times. His life and teachings have been compared to those of Jesus Christ, with some even referring to him as the African Jesus or Black Jesus. He was assassinated. The Black Christ was murdered three times, but came back to life each time. He was first murdered after performing Christ-like miracles, to the point he built up a following and was shot in the head. He regenerated his brain matter instantly. The second time they tried to experiment on him and he woke up on the operating table while the doctor was holding his heart in his hand. This is a picture of him showing the scar where they went in to take his heart out. He said, once he woke up from the operating table while the doctor was holding his heart in his hand, and he said, "Don't take my heart, put it back." And the doctor quickly put it back. The third and final attempt on his life, they invited him to the UN to speak. Upon boarding the plane, he was knocked out and cut into many pieces, then placed into separate radioactive containers. The containers were then all placed on separate jets and flew to opposite ends of the world, and his remains were burnt to ashes. He then regenerated a final time in the headquarters and said that he will leave now because they don't want him here, but there are many more just like him coming that will not be stopped. So there's going to be more. More coming that will not be stopped. And this happened in 1984. Like I said, it's a legend that's going around all of Africa. You can go type this and you'll see that they still have churches that venerate this man. Also, just to take it a little further, let you know how the 21st century response is to Caucasians know that they are looking for a Messiah figure to come and impact the lives of a people like all people that were downtrodden in the Bible or any past spiritual group. They've always were sent a messenger. They were always sent a savior. They were always sent some type of God figure to redeem and uplift and deliver the people. Well, Caucasians knew this, and they're looking for us to have a Black Messiah. And here in FBI's COINTEL program titled Black Nationalist Hate Groups, this is the second objective of that program: prevent the rise of a Black Messiah who could unify and electrify the militant Black nationalist movement. Malcolm X might have been such a Messiah, but he is the martyr of the movement today. Martin Luther King, Stokely Carmichael, and Elijah Muhammad all aspire to this position. Elijah Muhammad is less of a threat because of his age. King could be a very real contender for this position should he abandon his supposed obedience to white liberal doctrines, nonviolence, and embrace Black nationalism. Carmichael has the necessary charisma to be a real threat in this way. This was in the early 1960s, or the mid 1960s. This is still an objective. They haven't discontinued this objective. Every Black man or woman that has challenged this system, that has acted as if they were going to be some form of a liberator of Black people, were handled no differently. Their character was assassinated. They were physically assassinated. They were deported like Marcus Messiah Garvey. Anything that can be done. We have all of these, the same responses. The Western world, just like they responded to Simeon Toko. So based upon this reality, they're looking for a Black Messiah. They're looking for somebody that looks like us to save us, so that the first response they can have is kill them, subdue them, assassinate, restrict. So that means that a plan has to come into place to challenge this effort, this conspiracy. And the Nation of Islam has been teaching a Black God for over 90 years. But we've been teaching that the Black God came in the person of Master Farah Muhammad, that he had to come in a form that was not easily to be detected by a people that was looking for a dark savior, a Black savior. So a savior had to come, shrouded in the flesh that was easily acceptable, like a thief in the night. But if the thief in the night was a metaphor for how he would come hiding in plain sight. He would become hiding. He would be shrouded in a way that would camouflage him like a thief in the night, like a thief is shrouded by darkness. So this person appeared in the person, Allah in the person, appeared in the person of Master Farah Muhammad in the likeness of sinful flesh, and for sin condemned sin in the flesh. Master Farah Muhammad. Who is Master Farah Muhammad? His father was a jet Black man named Alfonso, and his mother was a Caucasian woman raised under Islamic law known as Baby G. According to the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, Master Farah Muhammad said that his father knew that he would not be successful in coming to a solid white country, and he, being a solid Black man, so he, Alfonso, said, I will go and make me a son, and I will send my son among them looking like them. My son, they will think he is one of them and find our lost people. Master Farah Muhammad was born on February 26, 1877 in the holy city of Mecca. He had the appearance of a white man, even though he was Black. Before arriving in the United States, Master Farah Muhammad was a world traveler. He visited the Isle of the Pacific, Japan, China, Canada, Alaska, the North Pole, India, Pakistan, and all of the Near East and Africa. He arrived in America in 1910, entering through New York. Master Farah Muhammad made his way to California, where he enrolled in United States University of Southern California. He resided in California for 20 years before returning to Mecca. Master Farah Muhammad returned to America in 1930, settling in Detroit, where he began building the Nation of Islam. In July of 1931, he met Elijah Muhammad, then Elijah Poole. Master Farah Muhammad began teaching Elijah Muhammad how to raise a nation within a nation until he was deported in 1934. For over 90 years, the Nation of Islam has been working diligently to return the Black man and woman to their highly evolved, optimal, original state as God's reflection of the Most High God. In all ancient and major religions, God appeared in the person of a Black human being. And if we get into the mindset of realizing that we are the perfect in our optimal state, not in our current state, brothers and sisters, but in our optimal, most evolved state, we are a direct reflection of God, and we can begin to function on that level. And what does that mean? That means that we begin to exhibit authority and power over all things, atomic particles, manipulating atomic particles, just being able to do the things that our Creator did, because now the Creator we began to evolve to the point where we are instilled and endowed the gifts of power and authority and creation that the Creator used to create all life. And we now, in our pinnacle optimal state, can begin to create universes and solar systems and begin to manipulate atomic particles in the name of that Most High, at the will of that Most High, all submitting to that Most High power. And we just have to come into the reality of this truth and allow ourselves to get on the path of truly becoming what we were destined to become. Gods, children of the Most High God. Thank you very much for this opportunity. I appreciate it. I'm ready to answer any questions.
Okay, I'm gonna start off with the, let me see. Yeah, I'm gonna start off with the first question. So are you saying that the God person is something that's always coming, that has been coming, and is going to keep coming, and until people realize the strength that they actually have as a God person?
Well, I'm saying that there's a process where the divine supreme being has always been among us, just been, you know, his presence has been hidden. There's a process. When it comes to that first God that created his body out of the triple darkness of the universe, that first body is not alive, but the process of that, the spiritual essence of that God evolving and manifesting itself in other superior vessels over generations, evolving stronger. That first, in the teachings of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, we're taught that first God was the physically the weakest God, because he spent trillions of years creating himself out of the triple darkness of the universe. But he started a process. The second creation was woman, so that he can recreate himself into perfection. The second, he pulled out of himself woman, and the first of his creation after created himself was woman. And that began the process of him recreating himself over and over again. And that, out of that process, is where all humanity began, or was created as well. So it's, we're saying in the teachings, every 25,000 years, another God knowledge is brought into existence. Another God is created. His knowledge is created for 20, it lasts 25,000 years. Then another God is created, and that knowledge lasts 25,000 years. Within that amount of time, that is like how that process evolved.
So you're saying that there's always a better human coming.
Always.
Okay, let me get to the panel. Thank you for that. Miss Naomi, can you unmute, please?
Yes.
Question or comment for Brother Thomas?
I'm still processing the information. I don't have a question or a comment.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Thanks for being here also. Brother Ahi. All right. I go to Brother Mashinda.
Hello.
Oh, Brother Ahi, you there?
Yeah, I agree with it, brother. You know, the basis is all with us. You know, I can't argue with the brother, and I thank him for his time this evening.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you. Brother Mashinda? Brother Mashinda? Are you there? Okay, Brother Ernest?
I'm kind of like Miss Naomi. I think I need to hear more of the teaching to get into the concept. I see the concept of what he's saying, and it, a lot of it makes sense, but I need to hear more, you know.
Okay. Professor Ra?
Yeah, again, assalamu alaikum, Brother Thomas.
Yes, hello, sir.
Just a couple of questions. When you begin your presentation, you're saying that you felt that if people knew that these rites or these images of God, they would be better people. Is that correct?
I'm thinking that if we can look at ourselves as being a descendant or a direct reflection of the greatest, most truthful, most righteous, most powerful, most refined being in the universe, I believe that'll be, you know, we it's almost like knowing that your father is a certain way, and you, it gives you the motivation to emulate that. You know, if you, you know, knowing that you came from a lineage of omnipotent greatness, and that overcame the impossibility of self-creation, like from a single atomic particle, and over trillions of years overcame the laws of impossibility. There's nothing in life that you can't overcome. You know, no matter how great the obstacle, if you can look at somebody and see yourself, look at the greatness in the greatest person you could think of and see yourself in them in you, I think that can just spark you to function at a higher level when it comes to your true potential, when it comes to overcoming challenges, when it comes to overcoming being negatively influenced to be other than that. We need to see ourselves as being the great people that we are, not just because of Africa or Egypt or Timbuktu or the, I'm talking the creator himself.
Yeah, but my point is, you know, Europeans paint their cause, many religious Europeans who profess evangelicals or they paint God white, but then they don't make them better people.
Well,
you see what I'm saying?
I do.
But what respond?
What I see with that is, like when I did my research and I went to Rome and I saw where, you know, the Catholic Church is where Christianity is it's like the root of where Western Christianity came from. The Pope goes to the bottom of the Vatican and worships at the foot of a black Madonna and child. The Pope. And like in my can you share that screen with me again, Brother Rosicky? The essence of Caucasian power has always been rooted in worshiping black people, whether directly or indirectly. When you enslave a people for 400 years and have them work in your behalf, that's worship. You rely on them for your wealth, your food, your productivity, your the strength of all of your nations. That's a form of worship. It's like kidnapping a god and forcing that god to use all their power, strength, and omnipotence to serve you, you know, but you controlling you're controlling everything that God, all the power that God has, you control it to benefit you without allowing that God to use it to benefit creation or nature. So when it comes to general Caucasian people, they only are taught what the elites teach them to keep them enslaved in a way. But the elites, the ones who run everything, the Freemasons who know that that the Christ that they identify with is a black Christ. When they go in into their shrine and they have to look at that Jesus, and they got to see Jesus as being black and not be shocked when they see him, or their head gets cut off, or when the Pope goes down to the Vatican, the bottom of the Vatican, and worships a black Madonna and Christ. Their strength is from worshiping black people. While they trick poor peasant class Caucasian people otherwise, so they can control them. So the Caucasian people you're talking about are just as victimized as we are by the elites who identify a black deity, who gain power from that. In my opinion, Pope, the ones who legalized slavery, legalized relying on black people for their power, their wealth, their existence, while they were worshiping a black Madonna and child in the Vatican, enslaving the direct descendants of that black Madonna and child, that's a form of worship to me. Slavery is a form of worship. When I see football games and basketball games, how they worship the athletes, trying to get autographs and paraphernalia from them, just to touch the hem of their jerseys, that's worship. We're making them rich in every aspect. All of that's worship. It's worship in a diluted way.
But would you agree that most of the people in the world are not religious, are going to organize religion?
I agree that most people, I mean, you know, unless you're, you know, the Western way of practicing religion, the majority of people in the world are not religious. Like the indigenous, I mean, the black, if you haven't been touched by colonialism, you're not religious. You're more spiritual. You're more in tune with nature. So I agree with that, sir.
Yeah, but what I'm getting at is that, see, I think that, you know, teaching people to be better come from the family and parents and things of this nature, teaching the young. Because, you know, we as adults, we have to look at our lives and remember the things that we did while we were young. And then as we got older, we got more spiritual. As you get older, more people get spiritual. But what my concern is, you know, that, you know, it's very difficult for young people or any people. Like Dr. Ben said, all those gods, regardless of the image, were created by people. Gods don't create people. People create gods. And there's been all type of gods throughout history. But there've always been bad people and good people throughout history. You understand? Throughout history, there's been people that are not religious and who profess that they don't believe in a creator, no matter what color he is. They just decided to live a moral and ethical life. I'm saying that because, you know, when we argue that, and you and first of all, I admire your research, it was very deep, but I mean, all those different gods that you went around the world and brought up, and you still have a world in turmoil, you know. I mean, in each of those areas where you where there was gods that image is black, in a racist society, they're not going to see them as black anyway. And they have convinced many black people in a racist society that their interpretation of God is God or Jesus or whatever. You know, you've seen it at churches where they paint the man white. And my point is that, you know, I'm not trying to dispute what your premise. I'm just trying to let you see that even at the time that those gods were black, if you weren't part of their spiritual teaching or accepted that there is a creator or that, you know, you even if you believed that there was a God that created them, it's very challenging for you to be empowered by that, because I know from my teaching that the only reason the European rules is because you got the guns and the bombs, not because. And he would argue that God wanted him to rule. That's what he called manifest destiny and all that. And if God didn't want me to rule, he wouldn't let me create these weapons of mass destruction and go around with every, you know, bombing Venezuela, they bombing Nigeria, they bombing, you know, they bombed us in Oklahoma, they bomb. I mean, in Gaza, they're starving people and they're supposed to be Jewish. And we know that the Hebrew gods were black and the original Jews were black. But these white folks stole their identity and creating havoc in the name of religion and things of this nation. Even the people that formed Israel were not religious. You know, they were not. I mean, it's a fair kind of point out of another case. My point is that I agree that we should teach what you're teaching to the children, and that we should embrace it ourselves. And if it empowers us as people to be better, fine. But at the same time, we know that we're in a world where these people are hypocrites, as Malcolm would say.
Yes, sir.
They're religious, but they...
Yes, sir.
They don't even practice their own religion, you know. I mean, they created the people that came to this country, killed all the Indians and enslaved us. They did it to escape religious persecution in Europe.
Yes, sir.
And in Israel, in Palestine, that was Palestine. They went over there. They didn't fight their way into Palestine. Palestine welcomed them and turned on them. You know, took their land and kicked them off their own land.
Yes, sir.
Same thing in Africa with neo-colonialism.
That's right.
The man said, when the white man came, he had the Bible, we had the land. When he left, we had the Bible and they had the land.
Yes, sir.
And so I'm just saying that, you know, people have corrupted spirituality and creation.
Yes, sir.
And so when you say it empowers us, it only can empower you to be a better person, not necessarily to I don't see it empowering you to be able to because that's what the white man used to say to black people when they were hanging them. He said, I'm praying to God to hang you, and you pray to God not for me not to do it, and we see what God meant. So, you know, I'm just trying to figure out how we can use this research,
yes, sir,
to uplift and inspire young people to get more character and value.
Yes, sir.
You know, because you say they're black gods, but what really did they stand for?
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying?
Yes,
yeah, go ahead, respond to that.
Yes, sir.
What did they stand for?
And that, you know, that comes around, you know, what the Nation of Islam teaches, that we, you know, we carry ourselves in a certain way that not only makes us just good people, but it helps us grow and evolve into the state in which we are able to exercise power, authority, and be able to function to where we can begin to do for self, without relying on anybody else to do for us what we can do for ourselves. We're talking about character, fasting, prayer. We're talking about study. We're talking about chastity. We're talking about how to eat correctly to the point where you are putting things in your body and in your everyday life to where you begin to evolve. Each generation gets stronger and better and more closer to that original state, starting with being a good person, but then carrying that out into your actions of how you treat yourself and treat others. There was a comment that Naomi made in, okay, she left. Okay, no problem. But it's generational, Professor Ra. It's like it happens in stages. Like, I can attest that living a life of, you know, chastity when I was, before I got married, and even like now, you know, that there were certain things that occurred in my life that I saw certain power being manifested in certain things that took place in my life to show like, wow, there's something going on inside of me by not doing things in the world that exhausted energy, that took me, made me be able to do things, you know, to my body and myself to prevent me from growing and evolving into the man that I'm supposed to grow into. I was able to exhibit certain things, see certain things in my abilities as a man, power and overcoming the challenge that I've been able to overcome by not allowing myself to fall victim to, you know, drugs, alcohol, womanizing, certain things that happened that I was like, this is weird. Like my visions. I mean, I'm up here flying when I'm not even dreaming. I'm like leaving my body while I'm, you know, when I'm supposed to be asleep, and I'm flying. I'm walking through walls. I'm able to levitate things with my mind, and I'm seeing, and when I wake up, I'm like, oh my God, I can feel how it felt to do it when I was in that vision, in that realm, that spiritual realm. And it was like I was given, a glimpse of what my true potential is. You know, I was able to, and I still do that. I still leave. I'm able to like leave my body when I'm asleep. I'm able to like hear things in my room, and I use that to kind of wake up spiritually. And then all of a sudden, I find myself leaving my body, walking out of my bed, going down outside of my unit, and flying off. And when I talk to people about that, and I'm like, you know, I conserve the energy that would have been released from sex, from drugs, from alcohol, from doing all those things and vices that were taught in America. By not doing it, you conserve enough energy for it to manifest in true divine godly abilities. And even though it was done in the spiritual realm, it still was real. It like I felt it. It was as if I was existing in another realm, not looking at myself as a puppet in a dream playing a role, actually looking at my hands and looking through my eyes, my spiritual eye, and seeing the environment flying all the way up into the universe and flying and feeling the coldness of space hit my body. Being able to fly through the stars and go through different dimensions. That's the kind of stuff. And it sounds spooky, but I know what happened. I know what happened. I know when I leave my body, and then when I know what I did throughout my life to cause me to have those experiences.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and when I tell people, I'm like, I'm not special. It's just I decided to not do certain things which enabled certain gifts to manifest themselves in the spiritual realm to where if I have children on that path and children, 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 maybe the gap between spiritual and physical will be bridged and I will actually produce a child that can move something with their mind, that can levitate. You know what I'm saying? It's like we hear about the stuff, Baba Ra, that we, you know, back in the days and way back, people levitating. It's not like those gifts stopped. It's like we de-evolved. We became other than our original selves. And with that de-evolutionary process, those gifts departed. But what if we get on the path for those gifts to return by seeing ourselves as a God, direct descendant of the Creator, who, yes, sir, created and himself created a man from space, from the universe. So you said before that every God was created by a man. Well, I'm saying that the original creator created a man himself in the triple darkness of the universe, beginning the first process of man creating God, because woman births God. Man and woman birth God. After God created himself, he created woman, and woman and him created life. And we are a reflection of that, direct descendant of that process. And with that truth, we can re-evolve and back to the original state upon which we were created and begin to have that power and authority and those gifts of manipulating matter and floating and astral flight and teleportation and telekinesis and telecommunication, mentally being able to communicate without speaking. All that stuff is not a fairy tale. It's an ability that we will be able to do once we return to our original state. Mm-hmm. And it's going to take generations to do that. But I know one thing, my visions, me doing it in the spiritual realm is a sign of what is to come if we begin to live in accordance to what some of the things that I did when I was not having sex until I got married, not putting drugs and alcohol in my body and allowing all that energy to manifest in my spiritual abilities that will soon become physical reality.
Brother Thomas, question. How I hear exactly what you're saying, and it sounds magnificent. So when we look at technology and how technology is so vast at the moment, with the ability to use AI and come up with different products. You know, I do AI music now, and it's simply amazing to me how closely related is the ability of AI to what you're talking about, or do you see any correlations?
I do. It's Caucasians attempting to artificially do what we are capable and will be able to do naturally upon us returning to our original state. See, they do it artificially. They create a computer to compute things in billions of megabytes because the brain is more powerful than the computer. A brain has unlimited amount of storage upon which it, through a lifetime, can store, emit, absorb, and manifest unlimited amounts of energy and memory without it breaking down, as long as you treat the vessel properly and the brain properly to do so. They create these artificial technological things to substitute what they are incapable of doing physically to compete with what the Black man and woman can do naturally. It's artificial. And if we rely on it, it'll handicap us and prevent us from developing into our optimal state, because we'll be relying upon an artificial intelligence to do something that we can do ourselves. Another, just like I told before, Caucasians are constantly creating new ways for us to rely on them to do stuff for us, what we can do for ourselves.
So now, question. Yes, you don't advocate having the ability to either to use the technological ability?
I mean, I as a teacher and knowing the handicaps that our students already exhibit when it comes to doing things, reading, writing, arithmetic, and now they're they're more than anything using an artificial means of doing something that with hard work and practice they can do themselves. They are stagnating their spiritual, mental, and intellectual development. It's a stagnation. Think about it. If I decide to use artificial intelligence to write essays, I will never learn how to write an essay. If I use artificial intelligence how to complete mathematical problems, I'll never learn how to complete mathematical problems. If I type something into the computer and tell it to generate, create a car using 3D print to create my parts, and all I'm doing is typing on keyboards, but I never get underneath the hood and never lift up a tire and never up put together the engine, I'm not putting the car together.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying.
So it's a handicap. If we rely on it, look at what it's a right now. Our students have a phone they call a smartphone, but it's really the antithesis of a smartphone.
I know from my understanding, most of what they're doing is creating databases for all of the information that's coming.
Mm-hmm.
You get it from the databases.
Yeah.
And I do know that people should be able to learn the fundamentals of basic concepts and, you know, different subject matter.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll be able to do anything. If you have the basics, you'll be able to do any type of, you know, whatever you need to do if you have the basic skills.
Definitely.
That's all we really need is basic skills, and we can manifest what we need to manifest for ourselves.
Definitely. It's just
fundamentals.
It's mastery. It's like if you're relying upon AI, is there such thing as mastery? I want to be, one day, I pray to be a master teacher. I want to be a reflection of Professor Ra. I want to be, and Professor Ra became the teacher that he was. There was no cell phones. There was no artificial intelligence. He had to do everything. He had to go to the library, crack that book open. He had to go, man, he didn't have none of the stuff that we had today. And he's a master teacher. That's my goal, you know? And I could only become a master teacher going down the similar path that Professor Rod did. Now I could have more technologically advanced tools to do that. They can maybe have me do it quicker, but I still got to get my hands dirty. I still got to know how to get into that library and do that research. I may not have to go through the data cards like back in the days. I may have to be able to go to a database, but I still have to do I still have to know how to do my research. I still got to know how to do the fundamentals to become a master teacher. And like you said, we got to do the work. I think AI with what I'm having to do with my students teaching an AP class this year, and knowing how students with basic prompts, where it says just write a 3 to 5 page essay on this topic, and they're using AI to do it. 3 to 5 paragraphs, and your behind is using artificial intelligence, using and think that I can't see the language.
Mm-hmm.
I can't see the differences. It's like you're not even smart enough to camouflage it.
Well, you know, with the people who are administrators, all of those folks, and they give us the instructions that they can use technology. That's the hindrance right there. Now, if you say that when you're building curriculums that you're not able to use these tools and you need to use just your mind, then that's where you could get really back to teaching those fundamentals. But as long as they give them the permission to use technology, that's going to be, you know, any administrator, whoever's running the educational institution,
mm-hmm.
if they allow the students to use technology, then of course that's going to, you know, that's going to take away from their ability to learn the information, the fundamental information they need.
Yeah, and I've been able, I've kind of been able to kind of bridge the gap a little bit. I teach essays in steps, and they got to follow each step.
Yeah.
Writing process, and each step is an assignment, and they have to use, and it scaffolds them to complete the assignments like a puzzle piece. There are certain things that I do, but I know You know, if we don't get a hold of AI, it'll be like that movie or that cartoon called WALL-E with those with the robot that was little robot that was on Earth because they couldn't survive on Earth, and they went into the spaceship and had all these people, the human beings that survived the decimation of the Earth was in this spaceship, and the spaceship was ran by artificial intelligence, and they were all overweight, sitting in chairs, they couldn't even walk because everything was given to them. You know what I'm saying? And when the Earth finally was able to rejuvenate itself and maintain life, they went back down to the Earth and they started walking around again. And you saw over time, they became slim and skinny because they started doing for self again.
Well, the thing about it is, I know that there's going to have to be some type of regulation of the use of technology at some point.
Definitely.
Because you can't just put in information, say, okay, and do it, and they just do it themselves. I mean, the tools do it themselves. So the educators are going to have to come up with some regulation when it comes to technology use.
You know, it's not difficult to do. It's just the thing about
it. We know that, but I'm just saying.
Educators are using AI, though. I get all these because I'm a teacher. I'll be online, and I'll get an advertisement talking about AI way to making lesson plans. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, dude, I'm not even there. I'm not even, you know, I think I've maybe used it, looked at it one time to get an idea how a lesson goes, and I took it off and let me just go back and do it back. But I may get it, you know, an idea of a lesson, but I see teachers actually using AI as a substitute lesson plan development strategy.
Well, I know that they're going to use these tools, but it's also going to lead to the collapse of this system.
Yeah,
it's going to lead to that. And so it's all going in the direction that it's going in. But fundamental basic information and knowledge is always going to come back to a head. It's because you know, people ain't going to be able to survive when it goes too crazy.
Yeah. And then if everything goes dark. So it's like it's definitely if we rely on AI, there won't be any teachers.
It'll be
like there'll be artificial intelligent actors and actresses. All they got to do is pay the actor $50,000 for their body digitally photograph their whole body and their move, and then they'll take it and manipulate it and put it in a movie, and the actor only gets one paycheck. Thank you for your body. Thank you for letting us dot matrix.
Yeah,
digitally transform your body into a digital representation. Now we can do whatever. We can make a pornography out of it. We can make it a action movie, a whatever freak. See, if we go there, they're trying.
Well, see, this is the thing too, Brother Thomas. It's not going to be a we thing. It's going to be a them thing because I already don't identify with them. So it's going to be a them thing.
Yes, sir.
So you're going to have different worlds. It comes down to it.
We have a parable of the sword up in this Molly Charlie, man.
Yeah. So I just was trying to get, you know, look, see what you, where you were, your thought process was with that.
I appreciate it, bro.
So I'm a divert to that from that.
Yes, sir.
And get back to your topic so we can.
Anybody else have any questions? I mean, I know it's a lot. I'm talking about man at his pinnacle, optimal level, without allowing the death style culture, which is what I'm talking about.
Well, see, this is exactly why this platform was developed, because people need to improve. So when you operating on the level of this heathen, like Professor Rod, don't let your oppressor be your teacher. This oppressive type of thought process is the generation process of people. Mm-hmm. So if we have things about what you're talking about, operating on an ultimate level, yes. deprogram and use an elevation type of mentality to get to where you're talking about. And through it, through spirituality or practice, through cultural practices of raising children, like Professor Ra was talking about. So we definitely is I think we're on the same page. It's just we're coming from different angles.
Definitely, as always.
Yeah, we're coming from different angles, and we all want to be operating at an optimal level as humans, because that's what it's about. Yep, when Ra talked about the Kawaida mm-hmm. philosophy, taking the best from all African practices, the best. Exactly. And that's going towards optimal type living. Mm-hmm. I think it's excellent when you talk about that, because we're headed in that direction.
Sure.
And we have to filter through all of the mess that comes our way.
That's right.
Ernest, you come up with any questions or comment so far?
No, I'm just observing. I'm doing the AI on all this. Absorbing all of it, and I'll come to some kind of conclusion.
You're using the Ernest African intelligence with creating the database, and then you go put it through the computer.
Right.
Yeah, I get it.
Now, do I want to do this or not? You know, it boils down to that. Like Professor Ross said, all of this boils down to the individual. What do you want to do?
Brother Ahi, any question or comment before we get out of here? You still there, Brother Ahi?
He's somewhere pulling for the Detroit Lions and Detroit.
All right. Anything else, Professor Rob, before we close?
Oh, no, I just want to thank Brother Thomas for coming on and sharing his wealth of knowledge and research and giving us food for thought. And
that's
programming is food for thought. And hopefully that I'd like to have some powers to levitate. Yeah. I wish I could do a whole bunch of levitating. You know, so but I'm gonna see if I can get it.
Yes, you will. I think your future generations will be doing it, bro. Just like you know, the path that we're on right now, it's gonna take a few generations. But as long as we're on this path, and we, like you said, each one teach our children and keep it going.
Mm-hmm.
I appreciate you. Thank you so much, Professor Rod. Thank you, Brother Rasaki. Thank you very much, Brother Ernest. It's always good to see you, my brother.
Thank you.
You know what I'm saying? I love y'all brothers, man. And my next one, I'm working on my next presentation as we speak.
That's beautiful, Thomas, man. I appreciate you coming on, giving us this information. And so next week, we have Sister Linda Shorter coming on. And our topic is Black Brilliance, Better Living, Black Inventors. So that's the topic for next Wednesday. Professor Ra, we have anybody for Tuesday?
I have to verify. I'll call you tomorrow. And you know, I'm not celebrating New Year's because I got old bills. Call you tomorrow.
Yeah, I'm day by day. It's Happy New Day, because mm-hmm. another day is here, and I was able to, like people say, I woke up. So since I woke up, I'm still on route to realize everything I set out to do.
Yes, sir.
But yeah, so I appreciate every day, especially every day we can gather here and receive this great information. Appreciate you, Brother Thomas, Brother Ernest, Professor Ron, Brother Ahi, Brother Mashinda that was here, and Miss Naomi that was here. Appreciation for attendance.
All right.
Thank you so much, brother.
Yeah.
So each one teach one in Conscious Corner. We're going to continue to do what we do.
All right. Yes, sir. Yes.